Walking Dead. Episode 2 is over, but we're just getting started here on the Fear the Walking Dead recap on Post Show Recaps. And now here are the two guys who are backed up in traffic on the 101. I'm Rob Sestrini. Here's Josh Wigler. Josh, how are you?
Rob?
Just go ahead and get on the 101 and take that to the 5 and then go on the side streets. Get out of here, Josh.
All I know is how to get to the reservoirs.
Yeah.
That's the only place I want to spend my time. If I have to get to the desert, I'm screwed.
Right. Meet me in the desert.
That sounds like the safe place. I have no idea how to get there. I guess I just keep driving back towards New York.
I guess so. That seems like a very vague meetup spot.
The desert. Yeah, it's like, oh, I'll meet you at the desert, at the very, very vague location of the desert. Unless they had something in their past where they did something awesome in the desert.
And yikes. Like buried a body?
Yikes? They had a great time at Joshua Tree.
At Burning Man?
Yeah, Burning Man with Vince Sly.
Oh my God, we've got a lot to talk about because things are really going to hell in a handbasket in Los Angeles on Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, I thought episode 2 was awesome. I thought that this was a really great episode of television. I'm very happy with this episode of Fear the Walking Dead. How do you feel?
Yeah, action-packed. It really was a lot going on. It really seemed like things are really reaching a breaking point where I felt like the things that I was looking for out of Fear the Walking Dead was really the scope of right. what's going on. That's really, I feel like, was addressed a lot more so than the premiere, which I really did not love, which centered a lot more on Nick and his story,
right.
which I don't love.
Right. But I'm glad for the premiere now. Like, I'm glad that we're through it. I'm glad that it happened. I'm glad that we got to meet all of these characters, that we know them pretty well after 90 minutes of basically nothing else, which was a little difficult to endure at the time. But I think that it pays off as soon as this episode. You know, we've got all of that work out of the way of getting to know who these people are, at least on like a surface level. And now that they're going through the things that they're going through in this episode, you really care. Like, it matters a lot that a person like Madison at the end of this episode is like, hey, don't go across the street and check in on 9-year-old Gladys. She's gone. The fact that that's the place that this character is at now, it has impact. It matters. It has some weight to it. And I think a big piece of that is because we got all of that character work out of the way in the first episode. Not an episode I'm dying to revisit anytime soon, but I'm glad it happened. I'm glad it got us to the place that we're at right now.
Yeah. If I was going to do any Monday morning quarterback, I'd say maybe could you have done a 2-hour premiere and sort of cut half an hour of fat out of the first episode and ended the 2-hour premiere with this episode? I feel like then you'd really have people coming away from that first episode like, oh my God, I can't wait to see where this is going next.
I would have been good with like the Sunday Monday punch, like the do one night
Better Call
then,
Saul.
Yeah, do the Better Call Saul thing. I also would have been fine if they had figured out a way to do those 90 minutes and 60. That would have been great.
Yeah. But who cares? Great. We're here now.
Yeah.
I'm really happy in the book.
I'm very happy with where we're at. I think a lot of really cool things happened this week.
Yeah, a lot going on now as the world begins to descend into a chaos that we know as Walking Dead fans that they will never recover from.
Oh, this is it.
This is it.
Yeah, man. This is how it goes.
This is it. So a lot of stuff to talk through here tonight on our Fear the Walking Dead podcast. Of course, you could subscribe to our Walking Dead all-encompassing podcast that we're talking to you in right now here at postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes. And of course, this is all one podcast feed. We will keep it going all through the return of The Walking Dead in but 5 weeks. And apparently no episode of Fear the Walking Dead coming up next week, Labor Day weekend.
Is that true?
They said next in 2 weeks on Fear the Walking Dead.
Oh, wow. I snoozed through that part.
Yeah. So unless I'm wrong about something, what are the chances of that?
That's never happened before.
I believe no episode for Labor Day weekend.
Okay. So we'll just be grilling.
Pick it up 2 weeks from tonight.
Barbecue.
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
So, did you hear the news, Rob, about this? Speaking of commercial breaks that I missed out on, how about commercial breaks I never want to miss out on? Did you hear this news about the Fear of the Walking Dead standalone episode that's going to be airing as commercial breaks? in between segments of The Walking Dead proper come season six.
No, I didn't know about this. I thought that was going to be a web series. I heard about and I read about that it's going to be all taking place on an airplane. But instead of commercials in one episode of The Walking Dead, they're going to do interstitials of this Fear the Walking Dead episode.
Yeah, they're going to do... So Walking Dead has, in the past, they've done these web series where they're just, like, doing these side adventures of characters in the zombie apocalypse. They're usually a little bit hokey. They're not fantastic quality. But, you know, they're fun. They're diverting. They're whatever. They're doing something like that, I assume, with quality that's going to be closer to what you would get in an episode of Fear the Walking Dead or The Walking Dead, because they're going to be airing it on television, and it's going to be this whole storyline that takes place on an airplane. A zombie outbreak on an airplane, Flight of the Living Dead type of thing, which is a real thing. And I guess what it's building to is there's going to be a character in that storyline, in that standalone thing, that is then going to pop up in season two of Fear of the Walking Dead as a main character.
That's cool. I like
that. It's like the backdoor Desmond pilot, I feel like.
Yeah.
Oh. In fact, let's get Henry Ian Cusick as this character.
That's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, so that was something that came out this week. I thought that was cool.
I feel like it's going to be a little confusing to be following one story in the commercials of another story, but sure, we'll go with it.
Did you also find out the really sad news? This is unrelated to Fear the Walking Dead, but super related to horror, that Wes Craven died. Wes Craven died tonight. That's
horrible. I did see that on IMDb when I was looking up the character names for Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, that's a big bummer.
Yeah, so sad news for the horror world tonight.
Sad news for the horror world. I'm sure that Wes Craven would be pumped to know that Fear the Walking Dead was awesome tonight.
Yeah. Josh, let's talk about this Fear the Walking Dead episode that we just watched here tonight. And to me, I really felt like a certain gravity in watching this that I've never actually felt before in watching the actual Walking Dead, because things are so far gone in The Walking Dead that they've passed a point where I can relate to what's happening.
Right.
But in watching this episode tonight, and I guess this is a testament to the realism of what we saw tonight, it would be very hard to watch this episode of television and not be conjuring up images of things that we've seen on the news in the last, you know, 12 to 18 months, whether it's Ferguson or Baltimore, right, or a lot of these real life situations where the order in a city has just been lost.
Yeah.
And it really was kind of chilling to watch it. And, you know, zombie story aside, it's like, you know, not necessarily like fun, but it was gripping.
Compelling. Really compelling. Yeah, I wonder how that's going to land with everybody. You liked it. You thought that they did a good job with that. You didn't think that it was heavy-handed.
It definitely felt realistic, but not in the way of like something that I would enjoy watching, and not to say that it was poorly done at all on the show.
I get what you're saying. I mean, something can be super compelling and make you feel disturbed and uncomfortable,
yeah,
and that's successful. And yes, I think that that's what this was attempting to pull off. And I agree. I thought that it did a really good job of getting you to feel like this is familiar, tragically familiar, that this is the kind of thing that we've been seeing a lot in our own world lately. But in, you know, in Ferguson and in Baltimore, you don't see a woman with like multicolor hair starting to shamble into view and get riddled with bullets and probably stand up afterwards if the camera were to linger there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the heightened sense of reality comes in, where the reality turns into the fantastic. And I thought that that was a really interesting juxtaposition that Fear the Walking Dead chose to move in that direction. I think that that's something that's really interesting about the show, at least where it is in this first season, and who knows how long it can sustain this. But the fact that we're getting a front row look at the collapse of civilization, I think that there were some fears that Fear the Walking Dead was going to really drag things out and it was going to be really slow and it just wasn't going to happen quick enough. But things hit the wall really fast tonight, and you even get this line from Tobias who says something like, when civilization falls, it falls fast. And I think we're starting to see that, but at the same time, there's so many things that have to fall that it's going to take a while for the whole thing to come down. And I think that that's where a lot of this drama and this gravity is you're talking about. I think that that's where it's coming from, where you see it in a moment like this riot in downtown LA. I think that that's something that's really interesting that Fear the Walking Dead is being able to tap into.
The other moment that I thought was very real and very well done, where after all of the excitement throughout the episode and Maddie ends up going on this adventure with Tobias back to the school, when she comes back to the house and she has the moment where she's trying to wash the blood off of her jacket and she's in the bathroom and she's running the water on that and she just starts to break down and cry. Yeah. Like, again, this is, the world is ending. She's a person with a family who probably had a nice life. Seems like she's very much in love with her new husband, Travis, and things overall seem to be going very well. And all of those things seem to be coming to an end. And the way that she was crying, I did feel like it was very realistic. And I identified with her probably much more than I identified with any Walking Dead character.
Yeah, and I mean, she had just come back from bashing in the brains of Principal Douche. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody who she had
He was never a douche. You didn't like that he did a fake out and that you thought he was dead.
It's not his fault. It's the show's fault. But I'm still going to call him Principal Douche. The show turned him into that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter anymore because he's gone. And I think, you know, obviously Madison's coming back. It's not just that she's taken a life. She took the life of somebody who she has, you know, if she wasn't friends with her employer, with the principal, she's at least spent, you got to imagine, countless hours in meetings with the guy, who knows what conferences they went to together, had a life with this guy, had a professional history with this person at the very least. And you get a sense of their rapport in that first episode that things are at least, you know, fairly warm between the two of them. So this was not an easy thing to do. We see this a lot on The Walking Dead, where people have to turn on the people that they love when they get turned. You know, we see, you know, like Daryl Dixon having to take out his brother, things like that. We see, you know, Andrea having to take out her sister early on in season one. It's a thing that happens a lot. I think that Fear the Walking Dead did a really good job of making that very emotional and dramatic, and really immediate and painful. And I think that Kim Dickens was really terrific tonight. I thought that she gave a really fantastic performance. And I think you're right. I think her coming back, trying to, you know, wash the blood out, and she's just so distraught. She can't even talk to her daughter at first. It takes her a while. She just really has to take care of business. I thought it was really good. I thought they did that really well.
Speaking of Alicia, that was the daughter. She has the start of the episode where she's visiting her boyfriend, Matt. Did we miss something where Matt was attacked by a zombie that just happened off screen and we don't know how exactly that happened?
Yeah, he just got bit by the curse of being from The Wire.
I guess yeah. So.
See, I told you, you can't be from The Wire and make it on The Walking Dead.
It really doesn't go well for him.
But no, I mean, she and him, they were supposed to meet at one point the day before.
Right.
And he doesn't show up, and she texts him, and she's like, oh, you better be dead. And it's like, oh, well, you know, turns out. We didn't see what happened to him, obviously.
Right.
We did not see what happened to him. We never found out exactly what happened. Obviously, he got bit by somebody, and he went home, and he's, you know, got a fever of 103.
Right.
And we assume now that we will never see him again.
He didn't seem particularly traumatized by being attacked by a zombie. He really just was like, oh, I think I just ate something. Like, he really did not mention at any point, you know, I really don't feel well. And it's funny because a undead person attacked me and bit me yesterday. I didn't think anything of it at the time.
Yeah, it might have been nice for him to mention that. That feels like good, useful information for these people to hear. If you want to give it to the fact that he was probably delirious with fever, I would probably be okay with that answer and just move right along.
He seemed pretty coherent.
But he seemed decently coherent at the end, where he's like, you got to go because I love you. That's the reason you have to go. So go. By the way, I got bit by a man and this happened to me, and I assume by the look on your parents' face that this is something she's at least vaguely aware about.
I would be like,
new information in this crisis that you will have to deal with while I am dead.
Yes. I'd like, you know that thing that's on the news, that guy that got up? Yes. That one of those guys, he attacked me.
Yeah.
If you know what's good for you, don't go near those guys.
Yeah, that would have been good. That would have been nice. I'm sad. I'm sad that that Randy from The Wire will not be joining us on this.
Seemed like a nice guy.
Seemed like a nice guy.
So there was a couple different subplots that were going on in this story behind the backdrop of the world is falling apart. Maddie and Travis each had their own adventures, which they ended up going on. For Maddie, would you believe, hey, look at this. Here he is. He's back. We had a wager of whether or not we would see Tobias again. And here he is. Tobias, major player.
Major player, hopefully forever. But I mean, he seems like he dips out of the picture by the end of this thing.
Seemed like it, but we thought that last week. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Tobias pop up again next week.
He's just always going to show up.
He's just always going to be there. Boy, Tobias, for his little X-Acto knife that got confiscated at the school, for the guy that seems to know everything about the zombie attack, really? Was that really that little paint knife? That's going to be the difference maker? He had to go back to school to get that?
Well, it seems like he came back for the food. The cafeteria food, which apparently is going to survive for 3,000 years.
Yeah. I think they're cafeteria. Actually going to start sending the cafeteria food to the Dharma Initiative. That's how that all got started.
Cafeteria food is meant to, it's designed to last 3,000 years to withstand nuclear strikes. This makes me a lot more optimistic about the apocalypse. I mean, I know cafeteria food isn't like the greatest food of all time, but I thought that we were just going to be living on Twinkies. That's the narrative that we've been led to believe. But the fact that frozen pizzas will endure for 3,000 years, I'm posting up at the school.
Well, I guess for as long as you could keep them frozen.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. I think Tobias might have been taking a little creative liberty with exactly the expiration dates of these food.
Hyperbole.
Hyperbole. A little bit of hyperbole from Tobias.
The hyperbolic guy.
Yeah. So him and Maddie load up on everything going on at the school. And we end up seeing that big confrontation between Maddie and the principal douche.
Yeah, principal douche. And we see Tobias is the first guy to make a move, and he just like stabbed him in the chest.
Yeah.
Tobias, I expect better from you. I know that this is early days, but you got to imagine it's a headshot.
Did you think Tobias was going to die there?
I kind of did, and I was really worried. And I think that that's a good job on the pilot's part, and I'm glad that it exists because I cared about Tobias. I didn't want to see Tobias get his face bit off by Principal Douche, and I kind of thought that's where we were going, or at least that he would like get a bite on the arm or something like that. It certainly wouldn't be, you know, he wouldn't be the youngest casualty we've seen on a Walking Dead show before, so I thought it was completely within the realm of possibility. I thought that he was a goner.
Now, while Maddie was dealing with everything at the school, we saw the plight of Nick as he begins to go through, what do you call that, detox?
Yeah, detox, withdrawal, what have you. Yeah, it's not going well for him. And he even says to his mom, and it's what launches her into the whole crusade to go find the oxy. He says to her, like, you know that we're about to step into a world of shit. And she's like, yeah, I'm aware. I'm aware. So that's where we go with Nick this week. They really ought to change him out of those clothes, don't you think?
You would think so, yeah. Take him out of the Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas uniform.
Wardrobe change, please. I really hope so before long. If that's like his outfit for the whole thing, it's going to be really hard to get on Team Nick.
Yeah, he could take off the windbreaker at some point.
At some point would be nice. Maybe take a shower while they still have hot water.
Or, you know, maybe hang out in the bathroom considering what he's about to go through, not just like in the living room with a bucket.
Right, and just like puking on the floor.
Yeah. Did you think there was anything to... Did he intentionally make himself sick when Alicia was trying to leave the house?
Interesting that you should ask that. That was a question that Dalton Ross asked in his post-mortem with Dave Erickson, the showrunner of Fear the Walking Dead. I guess this is a thing that Dalton's going to be doing every week, it seems like, at least. And he asked this question. He says, is he faking the seizure or was he just taking credit for Alicia not leaving?
Because let me just say, if he was faking the seizure, I will like him more than if it just happened to be the coincidental seizure that just happened to happen at the right moment, at the right time, to save his sister's life.
Unfortunately, it is Deus Ex seizure. Yeah. He says, this is what Dave Erickson says of that scene. He says, he was taking credit. I think it's true to his character. His mom comes back. She's gone out to get him his fix because she wants to keep him balanced long enough for them to get in their car and hopefully make it to the desert and get away from the danger. And I think that particular scene, he's an addict and he's selfish and he wants his pills and he wants more. And it comes off of a moment where Madison stares him down and he has to do something to gain favor. So it's a nice character moment. I think that Frank played it very well. It was him going through sort of hardcore withdrawal and it led to him seizing. And then he tries to exploit that for his own advantage with his mom. That's the explanation for that.
Well, what's the part that he's trying to exploit to his advantage, the seizing?
To be like, hey, your daughter was going to leave, but I made her stay.
Okay.
Yeah, I made her stay. So You should be thanking me.
Got it.
That's the thing.
Yeah. I thought that it would have been a nice moment if he, because he cared for his sister, like pretended, like stuck his fingers down his throat and made himself throw up.
That would have been a really convincing acting job.
Yeah, well, that's... I didn't think that was the case because it seemed like he was definitely having a seizure at the point that she came back into the house.
Yeah, and that was total seizure puke. You know, that looked like that scene from Aliens when Bishop's getting ripped apart and he just has like synthetic android white vomit that's just spewing everywhere. That's kind of what that looked like.
Yeah.
It was gross.
Okay, so Nick is also frustrated at the block party or the little birthday party across the street from the neighbors who ultimately will not make it to the end of the episode. And he's upset, Josh, because he feels like that they're not even concerned that this is real.
Yeah.
That it's not happening.
Birthday parties. It's not, they really need to get their heads out of the bouncy castle.
Yeah, it's real. It's happening. Real.
It is.
You need to focus.
I know.
Yeah, what a lame party that nobody even came to it.
I would have gone. I would have been in the bouncy castle all day.
Yeah. Of course you would be.
Sounds weird.
So the neighbor, what was his deal? That it seems like there's a thing in Fear the Walking Dead where people are just almost like they're coming down with the zombie virus. Or was it the same thing as Matt, the boyfriend, that he was also next door neighbor, bit by a zombie at some point?
Right. This is a question that we got on our page here on postshowrecaps.com from Fernando Castro, who said, what is this flu that's going around? Could it be the infection early on as it's mutating? Maybe reports of walkers mistaken for the extremely sick or an unrelated deadly flu with bad timing that's mass producing the first walkers fast.
Yeah.
We've heard about this. We've heard about the flu. The flu has been mentioned. It was mentioned in the 90-minute premiere. We get signs of it again tonight. I do wonder, is this part of how the outbreak began? It's just a lot of people kind of, I don't know, I feel like serendipitously is the wrong word considering we're talking about the end of humanity, but kind of coincidentally or cosmically or karmically or whatever, it's all happening at the same time. It does sort of feel that way. It feels like people are coming down with something and it's the wrong time for that to be happening.
But I never understood that that was the case in The Walking Dead, that people got sick a la Outbreak or any of these other pieces of fiction where there's some sort of a virus that went around. Right.
Outbreak's great.
Yeah.
I mean.
The Stand. Right.
I love The Stand. By the time that, you know, we're watching The Walking Dead, though, we're so far past this point that it's, you know, it's almost irrelevant for one. And two, a lot of these people, you know, they're not going to have access to media and all of this stuff. Who knows how quickly things shut down for them. So maybe they just don't know. Maybe all they know is the world that they're living in. I think that it almost doesn't really matter on that show. So it doesn't bother me that much.
Well, it does bother me because...
So many things bother you.
No, but again, when you do stuff in fiction, and again, when The Walking Dead did this with the virus storyline, where it's just magically certain people are immune, that always bothers me. Like in The Stand, it was like some like very, you know, tiny, tiny percent of the population was immune. That's fine.
Trips.
But there weren't whole families. Like, I'm sure if there is some sort of a virus, I'm sure all of our principal characters will be immune from this virus. So don't come out and say that there's a virus, but just all the important characters that happen to be related to each other, just for whatever reason, they don't have it.
They're all Michelle Dessler in the hotel, and they're immune to the thing.
Yeah, so I never liked when shows do that, even though it happens. But we'll see. I have a feeling that it's not necessarily like an outbreak of something. I think that they're just like, sometimes they just have, for creative liberty, like they're going to have some people that are just like, oh, they're coming down with it.
Yeah, I also get the sense that it's not going to be like an enormous deal for the rest of the thing.
Right. All right. So then we also see Travis, and he's out on his own mission to try to get a hold of his son. We saw him in the premiere, and the son is out seemingly in downtown LA. I'm not sure exactly what he is doing there.
He's just, you know, hanging out on a bus, and then things happen.
Yeah. And so
they do.
He's on his way back home, and he ends up getting sort of swept up in this protest. He really felt like he was belonging to something. Seemed like he really was a guy looking for something to do.
He's a cause-driven guy.
Yeah, he's like, no, I'm a part of this now.
He's a rebel with a cause.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know very much about the Manawa side of the family. We don't know much about Travis and Liza and Chris yet. We're starting to learn. I think that we're probably in a place where we're going to learn a lot more about that dynamic. coming up. You know, the fact that they're kind of in close quarters right now in the middle of a really intense situation with the rioting and the looting going on outside. Night has fallen. You got to imagine it's going to get pretty ugly pretty quickly over there. I feel like, who knows, you know, this, he seems like a really angry guy. What little we do know about Travis's kid is from the phone call that he did take with Travis in the first episode, where he basically was like, oh, what are we going to do this weekend? You know, what are your big plans for me, Dad? You really want to hang out with me? So he seems like a guy who wants to work through a lot of things. We don't know what that looks like yet. I'm sure we'll find out probably shortly before he gets his face bitten off by a zombie. But it seems like a guy who is looking to channel that anger and to do something with it. And I think that's why we get him in the middle of this riot and really feeling like he's a part of something.
Travis is such a nice man. Why is Chris mad at him?
You're always mad at your dad. That's how it works.
Is that what it is? He seems like such a nice guy.
That's what it is. You're a really nice guy. And one of these days, Dominic is going to be really pissed at you.
I know. It's also sad, but true.
It's very true.
Now, Travis and Maddie are separated. They are in very different parts of Los Angeles. Seemingly traffic is backing up. We're seeing all these cars for miles. It's just like nobody is moving. Do you think that these characters are reunited again by the end of season one?
Yeah, I think so. Don't you?
I would think so, but just based on, like, if there wasn't a zombie apocalypse in Los Angeles, there would be some question if these two people would ever see each other again. Boy, you're downtown and I'm over here and it's rush hour. Well, right. It was very nice to know you.
I do wonder how that happens. And we also get that line from Travis where he's just like, go to the desert, go without me. I'll meet you there. I'll find you there. So it's murky in terms of how they're going to reconnect. It's certainly the desire. I can't imagine that the show is going to keep these characters apart forever. I think that a big part of the appeal of Fear the Walking Dead from the story standpoint is this blended family. And this idea, which we talked about in last week's podcast, but this idea of how The Walking Dead creates this Rick Grimes family, you know, this surrogate family with Daryl Dixon as a brother type and Michonne is in there and all these people who've come together and really view each other like a unit and they really needed to find each other and have people in their lives again. Whereas this show is taking that concept immediately with the characters that they have. That's where the show begins, is you have this group of people who aren't necessarily meant to be together, but are now being forced to be together. I think that that's the concept of the show. And I don't think that that concept is going to work out so well if you keep Travis, or at least Travis's side of the family, away from Madison's side of the family. I mean, the end result could be that one of Travis or Madison is dead by the end of this season, and they're left with, you know, the leftovers of the other person's side of the family. That could be possible. But I feel like at least the Manawa side of the family and the Clark side of the family, they are going to come into contact before the end of season one.
Of Travis, his ex-wife, Chris, and all of these people that are holed up in the barber shop,
the Salazars,
how many of these people are moving on with us in part of this caravan, which is ultimately headed for the desert?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that we get some of them. I think that we get a Salazar would be my guess. I bet one of those people comes out of there alive. I hope it's the old man. He seems like a badass. I feel like we'll get at least one of them, probably not all three. His wife does not seem to be in fantastic shape for the zombie apocalypse.
No.
She does not seem to be doing great. And I feel like Travis's ex-wife is marked for death.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel like a character that makes it past season one.
Okay.
What do you think?
It seems like we're setting up some of these people. I feel like the daughter from the people in the barbershop.
That she seems like a playa.
Yeah, she seems like she's somebody who could end up being sort of a big deal and part of the people that we're going to see as part of this big cast. Just like Tobias seems like he could be somebody who's part of this new cast. It's really hard to tell right now without sort of like going through IMDb and combing through who's in all the episodes.
What do you think happens if we go to the desert? If that really is the ultimate destination, if that's where they want to get to, if that's what they think is going to be the safest option, let's get to the desert. There's going to be no one around. We can be safe, all of this stuff. If that's where Fear the Walking Dead is going, what does that show look like? Zombies in a desert.
Well, I think that the desert would be probably an interesting location to hole up, and maybe if you have some sort of like a tent city, I think that visibility would be really strong. So I think that would be the best part about being in the desert, where you could sort of have like from 360 degrees, you could see if any walkers were coming around. That being said, we know in the world of The Walking Dead, the biggest danger is always the other people,
right,
which I think would make you sort of an easy target for some sort of a raid to come and take all of your stuff. It's also very hot in the desert. I think that you probably need to have some sort of a shade, or at least like some sort of like tent city set up to sort of hang out during the day. And I don't know what you're going to do for water. I think you're going to run out of a water supply eventually. You could stay in there for, you know, a couple of weeks maybe. But I think that that's not an ideal location to meet up. And also, once the communication system goes down, you would think that it's going to be very tricky to rendezvous in the quote-unquote desert.
Yeah. Again, unless the desert means a specific meeting spot.
Right.
But that's it's very vague.
Yes.
I'll meet you in the desert.
Right.
But what do you think in terms of as a show? Do you think that that's a cool location for a zombie story, is the desert?
I think that that could definitely be a few episodes in the desert.
Not
I feel like
spot.
A season of living in the desert, I think probably.
Is that the new Herschel's Farm?
Yeah, could be the new Herschel's Farm. I don't know how much there is to do in the desert. Like, yeah. There's not a lot going on there. It's the desert.
15 episodes in the desert sounds like a lot.
Yes, it definitely
unless they
does.
Like come across like some sort of like Area 51 type of bunker where they can get shacked up and they can start doing some repopulating of civilization, doing some studying on the zombies. That's where we could get our Day of the Dead type of thing.
Right. Get out to Area 51. I love that idea, but I just don't think that's where we're going, because I think the appeal of this show is that we're going to be in Los Angeles.
Really? Forever?
I think so.
I would like it if they moved out.
I mean, on the regular Walking Dead, I don't think anybody's complaining if they're on the move. Like, hey, this is supposed to be about a show in Atlanta. But right. I do feel, at least in the early going here, I think we're supposed to be seeing how this plays out in Los Angeles.
I mean, I'd be thrilled if Los Angeles is the setting for all of season one. But if it's the setting for the entirety of the show, if they never leave LA, I don't know what that show looks like. That feels like a show that's really spinning its wheels. If it's a West Coast story, if it's a story about things on that side of the country, that's really cool. You know, I mean, if they're staying in California or if they're moving out to Nevada or whatever, like, that's great. That's fun. But if it's all LA all the time, I don't know.
So you're fine if they like head up to like wine country, Silicon Valley, San Francisco, Pacific Northwest.
Go to Sonoma.
Yeah, Portland.
Yountville.
Sure.
Yountville's a good town.
Can I nitpick about something that you're totally not going to care about?
I guess, but now you know what my answer is going to be.
So there's this scene at the beginning of the episode where they're driving around, they're listening to the radio,
right,
and the announcer on the radio is talking about, like, this is a disaster of biblical proportions. We're losing the best pocket passer in the league, which is a very funny joke, and I like that they did it. But there is no football team in Los Angeles.
Where is the football team in California? San Francisco.
San Diego, San Francisco.
So maybe they're
Oakland.
Talking about the San Diego team, or it's like a high school football team.
The best pocket passer in the league? I don't know.
Yeah.
It was a great joke, but you can't have that on LA radio.
You would never hear that in LA.
Again, unless they're playing. I mean, you could argue that it's like some national show and they're playing a clip from somebody who's talking about their team, but it's a stretch for Los Angeles.
You can't argue that in the Fear of the Walking Dead universe, there is a Los Angeles NFL team.
I guess if there's some alternate reality where there is a Los Angeles football team.
Yeah, that's going to happen at some point, though, right?
It's going to happen, but not at the time that this Fear of the Walking Dead is set.
When is it going to happen?
When is it going to happen?
Yeah.
Maybe in the next couple of years.
Really? Like 2 years?
Could be.
Wow. Do you know something?
Yes, it's being talked about, but we're losing so many listeners right now. People are tuning out.
You haven't lost me, and you know I don't like sports.
Yeah.
I'm still here.
All right. Anything else from the episode before we get into some of the questions?
No, I thought it was a really strong episode. I don't want to leave here without doing our death draft. I feel like we're ready. I feel like we can do our death draft here.
Okay. All right, so who are we picking?
All right, so I think that what we're going to do is this. I feel like we pick three spots, three people to die. We'll do it snake draft style, as we're wont to do. And then let's pick a fourth person who is going to survive season one. These are, it's only for season one, of course.
Okay.
I will give you the floor. First choice.
Boy, this is tough. I don't think we're going to lose a ton of characters here in season one. So I feel like a lot of this is all for naught. I would say, give me Travis's ex-wife.
I was going to take her.
Yeah, because we need something. It's going to be this awkward love triangle if Travis, Maddie, and his ex-wife are all around. So I feel like that Travis's ex-wife, she's just kind of like yelling at him a lot. And I feel like that's going to be weird to always have her sort of like in the background.
Does she die before we get a scene with her and Madison together?
Yes. She's really? Probably not going to survive because she's not going to give the kid back to Travis. So right. You need her to die so that the kid can now he's the only guardian left. And he says, you have to come with me because your mom isn't here anymore.
Mm.
Makes a lot of sense. Makes this a lot cleaner.
Yeah. Well, I was going to pick her. And since I can't, I will pick her son. I'll pick Chris.
Mm.
I'll say Chris is going to go.
No, I don't think you can kill off Travis's kid.
I don't feel great about the pick, but I feel like he, of the main characters right now, beyond the ex-wife, I feel like he is the closest to death's door. And then I will say the old man's wife.
Old man's wife.
The old man's wife. Will be my second.
Salazar's wife. They really kept doing this. Like, I thought it was going to be like Chekhov's window that they kept saying, like, don't stand near that window. We're just like, don't stand over there near that window.
That could be the next thing that happens.
Yeah. I mean, at least two or three times that they were like, just, hey, get away from there. Don't stand right next to that window.
Yeah.
Okay. Give me Tobias.
Yeah. Oh, I hope not. I hope you're wrong. All right, and then let's both end with some big picks. Give us someone from the Clark family.
Okay. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed and hope for Nick.
Okay, you're going to hope that Nick goes?
Yeah, but I think we've invested so much time into his recovery and everything. I don't think it's going to happen, but just a shot in the dark. I think that they're all making it through season one.
Shot in the dark. All right, and I will take his sister.
That will be
my shot in the dark.
Yeah.
That's what I will do.
Yeah, and then she's goody-goody.
Then we pick somebody who's safe on both ends.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and say Kim Dickens is good.
Yeah, and I'll say Travis.
Okay. That seems... Yeah, this all seems pretty safe.
Yeah.
For now.
All right.
Watch us get heartbroken after Labor Day.
Josh, let's go ahead and field some of the questions that came in tonight. We've been posting a post up on Post Show Recaps. I use the word post 19 times in that sentence.
Yes.
And we are going to be taking your questions every Sunday night. And after we watch the show, we record this and then we will talk about it. So, Josh, let's get our questions fired up.
All right. So let's get this. Speaking of Tobias, let's stay on the Tobias conversation. This is a question from Rob Allison. Rob wrote in, young Tobias is showing his worth. He has become a walking post-apocalyptic encyclopedia. How do you think he will stay connected to these three families? After his first experience with the principal, you would think he would be hooked to Madison's waist. Even though he knew where the stockpiles were, he doesn't appear to have a home base. So yeah, so when Madison and Tobias, they split up, Tobias says something to the effect of like, oh, don't worry about me, I got this. I'll be good. I'll be fine. You go do your thing. I'll do mine. I could see that being the end for Tobias, that we just never see him again. You think that we'll see him again?
I think we will. Now, at the same point, we brought him back in two episodes. I feel like if we only saw him once in the first episode, I feel like, okay, we'd never see him again. But we saw him here at the school the second time, and he was certainly useful in, hey, get some of that cafeteria food. But I feel like we could have gotten that on our own. Like, there was no real reason to reintroduce the character of Tobias unless he was going to be a recurring character on the show. So I do think we'll see more of Tobias.
How is he going to get into the mix?
I think that he's just going to come back at some point and say, like, oh, I wanted to check in and see how you were doing.
Uh-huh. That's how it's going to work?
He has no other friends.
He's going to meet them at the desert.
Yeah, he's a never nude. He's nowhere else to go.
There are dozens of them.
Yes.
Dozens. So,
he has no friends.
He has no friends. This is a question I got on Twitter from Barry Wallace, who asked us, on Fear the Walking Dead, do you think Tobias might be related to Eugene?
Hmm. I wouldn't think so.
But that would be fun.
It would certainly be fun.
Yeah, that would be really good.
Yeah,
Do you think that Tobias could show up on the proper Walking Dead?
I wouldn't imagine he could.
Yeah, I hope so. I want him to.
There's just a big distance between everybody. Unless Tobias is like on the plane in the little minisode of like the Walking Dead flight from LAX to Atlanta.
Is that the flight that Michonne is on?
Maybe.
Huh?
Very well could be.
Could be. But so many years pass between Fear of the Walking Dead and the main Walking Dead that if we never see Tobias pop up on Fear of the Walking Dead again, dude could just roll up to Alexandria and he's like this crazy road badass. He's like, yeah, I came from LA. What's up?
Yeah, he grows up to be the governor.
Yeah, yes.
You know, cafeteria food, they say it lasts forever. Turns out it's not the case.
You eat too much of that and you'll have to pay the bill.
You'll pay the bill.
In the bathroom. Trading your name from Tobias to Philip.
Sure.
I feel like I would stick with Tobias.
Well, you like Tobias?
Yeah, I like that. We have a question from Umberto who asks, so is the fire extinguisher the new crossbow / samurai sword?
I feel like Umberto was trying to take my spot on the podcast on Twitter a little bit.
What do you mean?
Felt like he was trying to say, hey, if Rob doesn't like the show, I'll be the new co-host with you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm open to it.
Yeah. Settle down, Umberto.
I'm open to it.
Yeah.
I think that people were concerned that you did not like this show.
I
think that that concern was real, if you would like to address the concern.
I feel like I articulated my point, which was that I did not like the pilot, but I liked the direction which it was going. I felt like that it was not enough action and they did not get into anything that I really wanted to see in the first episode. And I felt like it was missing a hook you moment in that premiere. And I said that maybe I'm judging it unfairly because the premiere of the original Walking Dead was so great. But I said, on the bright side, I like where it's going. So I just didn't like the first episode. And I felt like that they could have gotten more into the scope of where this was all going, as opposed to spending so much time with the story of Nick, which I did not care for.
But you liked tonight.
I did like it tonight.
You liked tonight and you liked the direction it's going.
Yeah. Yes. So I stand by where I was, that I felt like it was going in the right direction, and I believe it is still continuing to go in that right direction.
Yeah, I thought it took several steps, big steps, giant steps in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think that if they would have had more of this, more of these beats in the premiere, I think that they would have been well served to do that. But over 10 million people watched the premiere episode, not quite as many as we predicted in our premiere recap.
Right, yeah, I think I took the over on 15.
Yeah.
I lost.
Just over 10, but it was still the biggest cable premiere in the history of television.
Yeah, so I think that the doubling down on a second season order on AMC's part seems like it was the right thing to do.
Smart idea.
Smart idea. This is a question from Emily Stobbs. Why the hell didn't Madison and Tobias get the rest of that cart full of food, all that effort just to leave most of it behind?
You know, I think that being chased by the living undead kind of makes you lose your appetite.
Uh-huh.
You know,
it's like, you know what? I'm going to go on a diet. I'm going to go on the don't eat a lot diet.
We both almost died. Let's drop the supermarket sweep and just get the hell out of here.
Cut our losses.
Right.
Yeah. This was another question from Rob Allison. Do you think the school could be a major setting or refuge for our heroes? No weapons, but lots of stockpiles. Also, no traffic, lots of locked doors, a little mini prison compound. Is a school a good place to survive the zombie apocalypse?
I think we're probably done with the school. I got the sense when she closed her door to her office and sort of looked at her name, which said Maddie Clark. Is that the last name?
Yes.
Maddie Clark, guidance counselor. I caught that the gaze was on the door for an extra beat. Kind of emoting,
like, goodbye.
Goodbye to this life. I'm closing the door on this life of being the guidance counselor. And now I'm now Maddie the badass in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. Speaking of Maddie the badass in the zombie apocalypse, Jennifer Grasso asks, why do you think Madison left her neighbor for dead? And would you do the same thing?
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like, especially early on in the regular Walking Dead, Walking Dead proper. I don't think Rick Grimes would have done that. I felt like that this was a very evolved thing that she did of, honey, the world is that far gone. Let's just let our neighbors die. Because right. from the practical sense, you have one neighbor that's a zombie, and now you have several neighbors that are walkers.
Uh-huh.
So in a practical sense, it might have been better just to go and help your neighbor as they're being attacked by a walker, because if you can kill that walker, you have less problems, but you could also end up dead.
Well, unless Madison does have that secret military training background that we talked about in the pilot podcast, then I think that, you know, she's not as, you know, prepared for these types of situations as a guy like Rick. Like, as much as you can be prepared for an apocalypse, Rick is at least, he was a sheriff's deputy. He had experience with this kind of thing. He'd been in shootouts before. I think he's got that kind of code. Madison just had to beat, you know, her principal to death. She just beat the crap out of Principal Douche. She just had to murder that guy. It was somebody from her life, somebody that she had had several conversations with, if not a friendly relationship. She's very shell-shocked, very traumatized, and now her daughter wants to run outside. And I think that Madison's, you know, maternal instinct is like, nope, you're not going out there. I'm not going out there either. Right now, we're just focusing on ourselves.
Yeah. The biggest problem, though, is going to be in the morning, there's going to be three or four walkers outside.
It's going to be ugly.
It's not going to go great.
It's not going to go great. And I guess we're not going to find out for a few weeks.
Yeah, for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm looking on the wiki right now. September 13 is going to be episode 3, The Dog.
The dog.
The dog.
Oh, no.
We know how dogs fare on The Walking Dead. Usually they are barbecue.
Barbecue.
Yeah, barbecue dogs.
Have we introduced a dog yet in the series?
Not on Fear. Not that I can think of.
Okay, so we'll see what happens
Maybe
next.
Maybe it's T-Dog. Maybe this is where T-Dog starts and we can have an early T-Dog cameo.
Origin of T-Dog.
That'd be cool.
Very exciting.
I'd be down with that.
Okay. Any other questions about tonight's show?
No, that's what we got right now.
All right, what's the hashtag?
Principal Douche.
Principal Douche.
Okay. Easy.
Yes.
Keep it easy. Keep it simple. First douche of the season.
There you go. All right. Well, Cabin Douche will be very excited.
Cabin Douche will be very excited.
All right. Well, this was fun tonight.
Yeah, it was. It was a really, really great episode, I thought. It got me really excited about the concept of the series and just the idea of being able to watch the disintegration of civilization over the course of these next few episodes. I wonder how long it's going to last for. Hopefully this entire season. I don't know how long that will be able to extend into season 2 if we're still going to kind of be on the precipice of civilization collapsing. But that's something really interesting and unique that this show is able to do that the regular Walking Dead has not been able to do. So as long as they can make it work, as long as it can be convincing that this is the world we live in, I'm really interested to see what it looks like.
My prediction is season 1 is all about the world coming down, and then yep. I bet time jump at the start of season 2.
Season 2, Area 51.
Yeah, so time jump at Area 51.
Yeah, it's
all awesome. Right. Josh, great stuff. If you want to follow Josh Wigler on Twitter, and why wouldn't you, go ahead and check him out. He's at Round Howard. I am at Rob Cesternino. We are both on postshowrecaps.com. That's where you can hear this podcast and subscribe to our Walking Dead podcast feed at postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes. Josh, anything else?
No, that's it. I'm stoked. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right, Josh. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments on postshowrecaps.com. Take care, everybody. Bye.